I don't mind telling you. He meant it as a present. £2,000 as a present all at once. He loves me. He's loved me all along.
Who? Said Edgar Clinch, sourly. But he already knew. As Löwenthal was returning to the newspaper offices on Weld Street, he heard someone call his name. He turned and saw Dick Mannering striding towards him, a paper folded beneath his arm.
"I have a juicy piece of news for you, Ben," Mannering said, "though you may have heard it already. Would you like to hear a juicy piece of news?"
Löwenthal frowned, distracted.
"What is it?"
"Rumour has it that Gov Shepherd's taken out a warrant for Mr. Sook's arrest. Apparently Mr. Sook turned up in Hokitika this morning and laid down cash money for a military weapon. How about that?"
"Does he mean to use it?"
"Why would one buy a gun?" said Mannering cheerfully. "Except to use it. I dare say that we can expect a shootout in the thoroughfare. A shootout in the American style."
"I have some news also," said Löwenthal, as they turned into Revel Street and began walking south. "Another rumour, and no less juicy than yours.
About our Mr. Sook?"
"About our Mr. Staines," said Löwenthal.
Hui Long was slicing vegetables for soup at his hut in Chinatown when he heard hoofbeats approaching and then someone shouting hello. He went to the doorway and pulled back the Hessian curtain with one hand.
"You there," said the man on the threshold, who had just dismounted. "You've been summoned by the law. I'm to take you to the Hokitika courthouse."
Hui Long put up his hands.
"Not Ah Sook," he said. "Ah Kui."
"I bloody well know who you are," the man said, "and it's you I want. Come along, quick as you're able. There's a buggy waiting. Come."
"Ah Kui," said Ah Kui again.
"I know who you are. It's to do with the fortune you dug up on the Arahura."
"The Arahura,"
said Ah Kui, mishearing him.
"That's right," the man said. "Now get a move on. You've been summoned by a Mr. John Fellows on behalf of the Magistrates Court."
After leaving the Reserve Bank, Mr. Fellows made a call upon Harold Nilsson at Nilsson & Co. He found the commission merchant in his office, drawing up a balance sheet on George Shepherd's behalf. The work was dreary, and Nilsson was pleased to be roused from it. Pleased, that is, until the lawyer handed him the charred contract, bearing the signatures of Emery Staines and Crosby Wells. Nilsson's face drained of colour at once.
"Have you ever seen this document before?" said Fellows.
But Nilsson was a man who learned from his mistakes.
"Before I answer you," he said cautiously, "I'd like to know who sent you, and what's your purpose with me?"
The lawyer nodded.
"That's fair," he said. "The girl Wetherall received this document this morning from an anonymous source, slid under the front door while her mistress was out. It's a tidy sum of money, and by all appearances it's bound for her pocket, as you can see. But it stinks of a set-up. We don't know who sent it, or why."
Nilsson had already betrayed Carl Devlin once. He would not do so a second time.
"I see," he said, keeping his face impassive. "So you are working for Miss Wetherill?"
"I'm not associated with any whores," Fellows said sharply. "I'm just doing a bit of research, that's all. Getting the lay of the land."
"Of course," Nilsson murmured. "Forgive me." "You were the man who cleared Crosby Wells' estate," Fellows went on. "All I want to know is whether this piece of paper was among his possessions when you were called in to clear the place."
"No, it was not," said Nilsson, truthfully.
"And we cleared that cottage top to bottom. You have my word on that."
"All right," Fellows said.
"Thanks."
He stood, and Nilsson rose also. As they did so, the bells in the Wesleyan chapel rang out the hour. It was 5:15.
"Very fine donation you made, by the way," said Fellows as he made to leave. "Your support of the new jailhouse on Sea View. Very fine."
"Thank you,"
said Nilsson, speaking tartly.
"It's a rare thing in this day and age to meet a truly charitable man," said the lawyer. "I commend you for it."
"Mr. Staines." The boy's eyes fluttered open, blurred, focused, and came to rest on Joseph Pritchard, who was crouching over him.
"Why, it's Pritchard," he said. "The druggist."
Pritchard reached out a gentle hand and pulled back the collar of Staines' shirt to expose the blackened wound beneath. The boy did not protest. His eyes searched Pritchard's face as the chemist examined the wound.
"Did you manage to scrape up a piece of it?"
he whispered. Pritchard's face was somber. "A piece of what?"
"A piece of the resin," the boy said. "You said you'd stand me a piece of it."
"I brought something to take the edge away," Pritchard said shortly. "You've found a thirst for the smoke, have you? That's a nasty wound you got there."
"A thirst," the boy said. "I said it was like a thorn. I never heard the shot, you know. I was in the coffin at the time."
"How long have you been here? When was the last time you ate?"
3 days, the boy said. "Was it 3 days? It's very good of you. Excessively kind. I suppose it was midnight. I fancied a walk."
"He's not talking sense," Pritchard said.
"No," said Tafari. "Will he die?"
"He doesn't look too thin," Pritchard said, feeling Staines' cheek and forehead with the back of his hand. "Someone's been feeding him, at least. Or he's managed to scavenge wherever he's been.
Christ!
8 weeks. Something more than prayers is holding this one together." Staines' gaze drifted over Pritchard's shoulder to Taufari, standing behind him.
"The Maoris are the very best of guides," he said, smiling. "You'll do beautifully."
"Listen," Pritchard said to Staines, pulling his collar over the wound again. "We've got to get you onto the trap. We're going to take you back to Hokitika so that Dr. Gillies can take that bullet out of your shoulder. Once you're on the trap, I'll give you something to take the edge away. All right?" The boy's head had fallen forward.
"Hokitika," he mumbled.
"Anna
Magdalena."
"Anna's in Hokitika waiting for you," said Pritchard. "Come on now. The sooner the better. We'll have you in town before dark."
"He wrote to her an aria," said the boy, "as a token. I never made a vow."
Pritchard lifted